Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
Order a free English lesson with us at www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Are you asleep?
I'm not, but actually I am.
You are?
Well, I mean, no milk for my coffee, so I can't wake up. Actually, I don't drink coffee, but today I kind of feel like drinking coffee, so I made a cup of coffee and I opened the fridge and I discovered that I have no milk and I can't drink black coffee.
Oh, all right. I always thought that, you know, a black coffee is a perfect coffee because, I mean, it's perfect for you to wake up.
I know, it's perfect for you to wake up, but it tastes like black coffee. So, I don't know, well, I like black coffee, but in fact, I don't drink coffee at all, but when I do... I usually
well, it sounds like there is a commercial in the United States. I'm sorry that I interrupted you. I don't always drink beer, yeah, but when I do, so he's a very funny man. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So but when I do, I prefer coffee with milk. But sometimes I can drink black coffee, but that's not the case today. So
what did you usually order in Starbucks?
Frappuccino.
What is it made of?
Caramel frappuccino. It's made of ice.
Mm-hmm. A good beginning.
Milk.
Uh-huh.
Well, ice is the most important ingredient, I'd say. That's what makes it so frappuccino-like. ice, milk, and I think some ice cream.
Uh-huh.
And caramel. That's it.
I don't know.
My friend used to call it crappuccino.
What, because of the color? Why?
Because of the color and because he said that it tasted disgusting. So, because he was a tea guy. He preferred tea.
Oh, yeah.
And green tea. And when I ordered this frappuccino, he was like, "That's a crappuccino."
When I was in the United States, I didn't frequent Starbucks. I worked in Dunkin' Donuts.
I mean, Dunkin' Donuts coffee is okay, but
it's okay. Yeah.
It's just for, you know, for old people.
True, yeah.
It's just for old people. There was no fun. There was no excitement about Dunkin' Donut coffee. So when we came to work holding these Starbucks cups, our manager told us, "This is the last day you're working at Dunkin' Donuts if you don't throw these cups right now." So we worked at Dunkin' Donuts, but we drank Starbucks coffee because Starbucks is, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm advertising it, but it's the best coffee ever because I'm not very good at coffee, you know, at experiencing coffee, but I just like the atmosphere and fun and excitement about Starbucks, so it's the best. But you know what, when I was in China, I saw Starbucks coffee bar and I told my friend, okay, let's go have a cup of coffee. So we went into the Starbucks, we ordered two cups of coffee, and my friend was sitting there with a poker face and was like, "So what's the old fun about?" So he didn't get it. But it's fun. Once we were making banana split with my friend Dina, and one of our friends tasted it, and I was like, "Tastes good, isn't it?" And he's like, "Yeah, but you know what, if you eat it every day..." I was like, "Well, not every day, you can eat it like once a month." And I was like, "Once a month is okay, but if you eat it every day..." So the same thing with Starbucks coffee. If you drink frappuccino every day, then...
But I guess it might be addictive, especially if you go to work every day and, for example, Starbucks is on your way. You just kind of get in, take that frappuccino and go to work. That
well,
makes,
then
like...
you miss lunch.
Well, but it's difficult. You know, it's kind of... Oh, I don't know. no, yes, really.
And then you see McDonald's on your way, and you're like, well, then Burger King.
That's marketing for you. That's marketing. So.
And then, by the way, you get to work.
If you get to work.
You get to work, yeah. You get a wheelchair.
You have to, again, what do you call
pretend,
it? Pretend. Yeah. Pretend that you're happy and clap and etc. She's spontaneous, okay. Super serious at times, strange and stupefyingly splendid. A supergirl with the superpowers of making good points and just generally having fun no matter what. Asha! Woo! And she lives in dread of winter. This is Landish.
Oh my God. Imagine you living in Siberia.
The tablet is now the leading device for e-reading among children. The increase in tablet use reflects the broader availability of new child-friendly devices, such as the Apple iPad and Amazon's Kindle Fire, as well as an increased use of tablets in schools. Among the families surveyed, Kindle Fire was owned by 27% of households, and the iPad was owned by 20% of households. The report speculates that Amazon's increased market share among households with children may be the result of decreasing prices, increasing advertisements, and the large selection of children's e-books. Though Kindle Fire's usage grew among families overall, the iPad remains the leading brand of e-reading device for households with younger children.
I don't have an iPad.
You remember that teacher we have who lives in Belgium?
Which teacher?
Teacher. Whoa.
Oh, the teacher.
The teacher.
Yes, of course I remember.
What type of accent is that?
The Landish type of accent.
Yeah. So our teacher came here to Chelny, was it? Like a year ago.
Tablets?
And what?
She came to Chelny on a tablet.
Exactly. On a tablet. Exactly. Like on a flying saucer. But yeah, instead it's a flying tablet. No, she came here with her daughter, and her daughter was like 2 years old, I think, or maybe younger. And I came to her, to her house, because I was making some paintings for her. Her daughter was sitting there with a tablet, and she was watching the cartoons. She was doing some exercise,
activities.
Activities, yeah, which are supposed to be good for your child's development. And for me, it was kind of, well, not strange, but unusual. It's a good tool, first, you know, to engage your child in some sort of activity. I don't know, maybe I feel like kind of it's a bit different from our childhood because we didn't have that.
When my brother was here in St. Petersburg, he told me that he wanted to buy some presents for his children. So we went into a huge shopping mall, and there was this kids store. So we toys, mm-hmm. some things that you can engage the children with. And there was the toy iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was electronic. You had to charge it, but it was for children. And my brother was like, so what's the point of getting this kid's iPad if my children already know how to use the real iPad? Because it's really easy. I mean, the touch screen and all these toys, even at a very early age, children can be pretty confident with that. So I think it's a great tool for developing, for engaging children.
If we speak about reading books, do you think that it is better if children start to embrace this e-reading, or is it still...
I think it is easier for children to read paper books because they can touch them, they can turn the pages, they can, this kind of physical thing is important for children. And they can turn the pages over and over, and they can, even doodle on the book, which they can't do on the ebook. But I think we are heading towards that. We are on the way to, if not to completely eliminate paper books, then to significantly lessen the importance mm-hmm. of paper books, unfortunately.
And I was also thinking about writing, because...
What do you think? Is it a good idea to... Sorry, I interrupted you. Is it a good idea to teach a kid typing first and then writing?
Maybe we are old-fashioned, yeah, because we still like books, paper books, and we still like writing. I think that we have to teach them first how to write properly, you know, handwriting, because typing... Can't they do it by themselves? I mean, it's kind of easy. It's just pressing buttons. What is there to learn?
Well, I don't know. Just to learn how to type fast.
It comes quite naturally, because for us, no one taught us how to type, but we still type pretty fast.
Maybe to learn the spelling, okay.
Again, you can do it, I think, better with... when
autocorrection.
Exactly, you have autocorrection. But when you write with your hands, you can do both tasks. So you can teach a child how to write. Secondly, you teach him about the... How do you call it?
Spelling?
Spelling, yes. So we are so not used right now to writing. Maybe it is already something of a past.
Oblivion.
It's not useful anymore.
I don't remember the last time I've written something. I'm trying to remember now. And...
you see, people don't really write. And
it's good to know how to write. That's the point.
It is good, but what's the purpose?
It's the same with every skill. I mean, you don't have to ride a bicycle every day, but if you know how to ride it, it's just useful, because if there is a day, if the moment comes when you need to ride a bicycle, you know how to ride it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When children start learning how to write, they don't start with letters. They start with some figures first, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
They are taught how to hold a pen, how to keep control of the pen.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's really important if nobody... taught the children how to write, then they would probably not know how to control them. I don't know. How is that? I don't even know what I'm trying to say. What about drawing and painting? Now we have this digital painting, yeah, the different programs. I mean, does it mean that the real painting and drawing is something that... That is less valuable.
I guess it's like with books. We say that books are going to be, you know, a work of art. It will not be everywhere. So people will start using these e-books. So it is going to be maybe in museums, maybe like a present, a good present for a person to give him a book finally. Yeah. And I guess the same goes with paintings, because take architecture. Right now, they don't do anything by hand there. They have special programs, software, which makes everything for them. And with art, I don't know, still art, yes, it's. I think that the value of art is in its being made by hand, not by a computer. For example, even I sometimes think that what is made by hand, with using oils, yeah, watercolor, mm-hmm. etc., is more valuable, much more valuable than something like digital art, something mm-hmm. made in coral paint. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Although it takes probably as much time as a regular painting, but I still think that, I don't know why, maybe again some kind of old-fashioned feeling.
I think I just remembered, you know, you remember when I had an interview with Sid Mead,
mm-hmm.
and he told that a computer, different software, is just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the talent, you can create, visualize what you see in your mind using any kind of tool you want,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a brush or a coral paint. How's that, paint or painter program?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a computer is just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it does not do art for you.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to be the creator. So I think that I absolutely agree with you. I think that something that is made with your hands, something that you can touch and smell and feel, is still more valuable, more precious. But at the same time, I think digital art is as valuable as visual art, yeah, because it's just a tool. if you have never tried the real paint, for example, you will never fully experience the digital paint because it behaves the same way they try.
Well, not really.
Well, they try to make it as authentic as possible.
Well, yes, but...
So if you have never tried watercolors...
Mm-hmm. Watercolors, digital watercolors, is very hard to find because, you know, real water, you cannot program... the software to behave like water, because water is very
unpredictable.
you don't know how it will behave, because everything depends on, first of all, on what sort of water it is, yeah, and then on paints, what is there in the paints, because it's a chemical reaction, then how much paint you put there, yeah, it also changes the picture, then the structure and the texture of your paper, and on your touch, everything is so subtle. Mm-hmm. And you cannot program it. All the software that I saw with watercolors, it can never be the same as the real experience. And if you take oils, yes, it is easier with oils in the software. They behave pretty much the same. But watercolors, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, all right.
Dear listeners, this was the opinion of our expert in watercolors. Thank you, our special correspondent.
Hey kid, want a toy with that Happy Meal? Here's a book. McDonald's is bumping out toys in its iconic Happy Meals in favor of books, at least for a limited time. According to a report in Ad Age, America's favorite burger chain will offer four original children's books carrying a nutritional message in Happy Meals for 2 weeks in November. Some 20 million books are expected to be distributed during the period. Edge reports that the books will feature new characters. The Goat Who Ate Everything chronicles the struggles of a goat who, well, eats too much and learns to eat better.
A goat struggling from obesity.
So it appears McDonald's is looking to make a regular thing of the publishing business, which plans to offer ebooks next year. Happy Meal with a book.
I think the children get so disappointed.
Yeah, can you imagine their faces?
Or and then there's this freaking book. And they're like, what the hell? Where is my toy? They're cheating on us, Dad.
What is that?
I want my toy. So there is a protest and demonstration of children wanting their toys. I'm sorry, children.
Yeah.
This is life. I think this is the first time you're experiencing that, when you're expecting something and you're not getting what you're expecting. Yeah.
I guess you have to get prepared for it.
Yeah, it's
at an early age.
It's about that. So I guess it's better to start early.
Yeah.
With books instead of toys.
That's very cruel.
Oh yeah. How would you feel if you were expecting something and then you got something completely different?
Oh, I would be furious.
Yeah, what would you do? Would you shout?
Yeah, I think that I would burn the whole building down, demanding my toy.
Well, it's also a surprise. It's supposed to be a surprise.
Yeah, different matter whether it's a pleasant surprise or not, but it's a surprise nonetheless.
Yeah, my brother's wife, before she got married to my brother, she used to work in a shop at the airport. And she was selling different sweet things like chocolates, candies, you know, stuff like that. And at that time, you know, a Kinder Surprise, these chocolate toy things were very popular.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are still popular. So, and a lot of people were collecting toys from Kinder Surprise. Mm-hmm. She opened very carefully this chocolate egg, took the toy out, and put some paper drawing inside, which she did herself. And then she closed the egg and sold it.
What? Really?
Real. And when they told me, I couldn't imagine faces of children when, oh, you know, they usually, what happens, parent buys this egg, they go into the plane, and then, mommy, can I have my kind of surprise egg? Yeah, sure. They open it. And there's some drawing.
Can she draw well, at least?
Well, no.
Oh, good. Well,
so they opened and it's like, where's the toy? Surprise! She had a lot of these toys. When I visited her, at that time she lived with her mother, there was like 200, 300 of them. A lot of them. And that was a dream of every child. I was like, can I have at least one? She was like, okay.
Okay. All right, it was very nice talking to you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Lots of books and discussions at www.lingvistov.ru.